Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We barely got finished with the Monroe veto of the, well, I call it the bonus bill, but it was a bill that Congress was trying to get passed in allowing them to create the Department of Transportation. So I kind of rushed over that. And so what I want to do is, before we get into Jackson's veto, I want to go through that again. But before I even do that, I need to remind you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that will teach you the details of the Constitution. Apparently, like I said yesterday, people are learning. I'm starting to get feedback from people that are pointing out. And, you know, nobody's going to give me credit. I understand that. But if you go through my podcast, if you've been looking at my content for the past year, I have been rallying and just basically haranguing regarding the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and very specifically how we can use the 14th Amendment in taking back this republic. It is just a step in it. It is not the end-all solution, but it does get corruption out of government. We still have the Herculean task of getting government back into the framework of the Constitution. And there's a lot of people that don't want to do that. I'm telling you, do you really want to strap your great-grandchildren or these kids that are just coming out of college, getting into school, do you really want to strap them with the Social Security albatross? There are ways that we don't have to not help pay those who are dependent on, those who have worked a whole lifetime and expecting Social Security. It's just a matter of actualizing it and no longer continuing it. Instead of people paying into Social Security, there's going to be another. Keep in mind, Social Security may be a huge albatross, but it's nothing in comparison to the outlays for social engineering in the education system, for Common Core. All of this crap that the federal government is paying money on, gone. We will be able to fund the obligations that, you know, the government has, well, I guess the way, the best way to say it is that the government has defrauded the American people in so many different ways that the primary fraud of Social Security, which has impacted everybody, everybody's been impacted by that, then, you know, you will get what you have put into it at a minimum. There's no reason why there are people that should not be able to have the help that they've been lied to that they could have. But we need to get government out of the things it has no business doing. Because as long as it can do something, well, look, hey, come on, we're doing this. Isn't that the devil's argument? Well, you're letting me do this, so why don't you let me do that? And as a matter of fact, that's why we're going to go through what Monroe said really quick. And I want to kind of focus on some things. So anyway, before we get into marketing, and as we kind of review these things, I'm hoping, because I asked you before, I'm hoping that you're pondering on what I have been covering regarding your role and your civic duty in petitioning your government in common law grand juries and petitioning your government for convening a local common law grand jury and your responsibility in the militia in enforcing the Constitution. You know, to be clear, there are many things that are in motion, many things that are just happening, and it is happening at breakneck speed. As a matter of fact, every time Biden opens his mouth, the polygraphs and the spectral voice analyzers that are identifying the lies are just getting pegged. And I'm going to get into that as well. As a matter of fact, some of the things, I've already got some notes on some of the crap that he's already stated. We will get into that. But what's really important is I want you to understand that the precedence of restraining government was done by Madison, Monroe, and then later Jackson in veto messages that made it very clear that if they couldn't use the Commerce Clause, the General Welfare and Necessary and Proper Clause, and the Supremacy Clauses, those four mystical clauses, if they couldn't use those to usurp state powers in creating a Department of Transportation, which I pray tell, how is it that they now have a Department of Education, a Department of Energy? None of those are nearly, I mean, there's no mention of energy. There's no mention of these things, agriculture, labor. They have no business meddling in all of these different things and these roles, responsibilities, and powers they've created. And it all started with the Department of Interior. Because, and I told you this, they realized that the expanse of America was done. They went all the way to the Pacific Ocean. They had territories and states planned to take over this land so that they wouldn't, so the federal government would not have any more territories to manage. They should have been planning the turning out the lights at Congress, but instead they aggrandized themselves to maintain those jobs, to maintain that unconstitutional power, even though it was constitutional for Congress to create the office thereof, but not to create a permanent department. And the fact is, they have no business managing that department. As a matter of fact, it should be reduced down to an office that reports to Congress and Congress alone. It should not be an executive department for bureaucracy and the deep state to ram global agendas down your throat. Sorry, getting a little excited. So what we want to do is, let me just kind of remind you also that we've got Constitution Day. It is about a week away. As a matter of fact, let me turn around and look at the calendar here real quick. Yep, it's next Thursday. It's a week away. So what are you doing? Are you try to find anybody in business that is recognizing the Constitution? I would love to hear that this is actually, you know, the comeback of the Constitution year, but it's not, because people are just worried about how they're being affected. They're just worried about themselves. And as long as we're hunkering down in a defensive mode, we can't organize and fight and take back our liberties with the tools that the law of the land still provides us. Okay, so anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and move forward. I know that there's, you know, probably a lot of other things to say, but let me just say one more thing. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. We would be honored if you would consider giving us an endorsement to your like-minded friends. Highly recommend that they start drinking from the well here, because we actually go through the evidence all the time. That's the primary focus of the show, is to go through the evidence that there's no refuting the fact that the federal government has no authority to do almost all the things that they're doing. And your state is doing things that they have no business doing either. But let's get back to Monroe and what Monroe was saying, because this is the interesting thing, and I've highlighted this last time, and this is what he says. I am of the opinion that Congress do not possess this power, that the states individually cannot grant it, for although they may assent to the appropriation of money with their limits for such purposes, they can grant no power of jurisdiction or sovereignty by special compacts to the United States. This power can be granted only by an amendment to the Constitution in the mode prescribed by it. In other words, through the Article 5 process, the Congress, two-thirds of Congress, create an amendment. They pass it by two-thirds, and they send it out to the states, and three-fourths of the states collectively agree that this is a power that is best vested in the federal government. In 1926, Congress, with two-thirds of both houses, this is after the 17th Amendment, And so it's a decade after, and now everybody's kind of churning on this big government concept. They passed an amendment to go to the states so that the states could actually, manage child labor. It was a labor amendment granting the federal government the jurisdiction. This would have been their nose in the tent in being able to have constitutional power over labor, and the states rejected it. Oh, what do you say? They have a Department of Labor now, and they dictate practically everything regarding labor, unemployment, and all of these types of benefits. Are you kidding? No, I'm not. The states actually rejected the amendment to the Constitution saying, you have no business. We definitely don't think this is something you need to do. And now, during the FDR era, he seized the power. And even though the states may have just moaned and groaned and assented to it, they were bullied and they were hoodwinked into allowing the federal government to do that. But you know what? Even though they did that then, they still have not, as Monroe clearly stated, that even though they may assent to it individually, they cannot grant it. And the only way we're going to be able to take back all these unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers is by the states collectively asserting that they never delegated those powers. That is Republic Review. That's a part of the audit, or it kicks off with the audit. But we will be right back after a couple of promos. Stay tuned. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so just to help time pass, I am not going to read the entire Andrew Jackson 9-page dossier or ramblings on this one particular issue. I mean, people think I'm, you know, a voluminous writer or very, what do you call that? Verbose. Anyway, I'm going to just read this, and then we're going to point out the highlights regarding Andrew Jackson, that he basically duplicated the fact or agreed with the assertion that you cannot just take this power upon yourself, Congress. You have to amend the Constitution. So anyway, back to what President Monroe stated in 1822. He basically said, if the power exists, it must either because it has been specifically granted to the United States, or that it is incidental to some power. What's incidental? Well, we have the power of the controls of the citizens, both coming abroad, you know, going abroad and coming in, as well as visitors. Therefore, the United States, it's incidental within the management of the citizenship to identify passports so that when you leave and you come back, we know who you are, that you're not just somebody sneaking in or using a false identity or anything like that. And so that's an incidental power. It is within the boundaries to do something necessary and proper for the management of U.S. citizens. Now, in this particular case, you know, he basically breaks it down. He says, it has never been contended that that power was specifically granted. He says, it is claimed only as being incidental to some one or more of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. First, from the right to establish post offices and post roads. Post offices, everybody understands what that is. That's the communication via parcel. Now, post roads don't have anything to do with the post office. Post roads are roads that will take you from the state capital to the national capital, to Washington, D.C. That is a post road. Now, if you are looking at the network of roads, you can clearly see that there are all sorts of interstates. Now, those interstates are legitimate if they're a post road. In other words, it is the direct routing for your state capital. Let's say from Denver to Washington, D.C. That would be what? I-70 that would go across. I-90 would be another. There are all these other I-84. Let me see here. What are some of the other ones? I-15, north and south, or I-5, north and south. Highway or Interstate 101 or 1. All of these roads going north and south, unless they are like on the eastern seaboard that takes you from Maine all the way down through Boston and down to D.C., okay, that's a post road. But all of these other highways and interstates that connect to, you know, that were designed to connect to major cities are not post roads. Sorry. Just can't get there from here. Now, technically, you could say that some of these are post roads because they're a more direct route now, but that was never the intent for the federal government to create such a webbing of post roads. So anyway, just to be clear, a post road is not a road for the postal service. It is an access route for government to travel. Back in the days when they didn't have airplanes or anything else, post roads were roads that would take you to one seat of government to the national seat of government. Anyway, so that was the first justification, the right to establish post offices and post roads. Second, from the right to declare war. Well, do they have the ability to declare war between states? No, these states are in a peaceful union. I don't understand from the right to declare war. I can't see that as incidental. Anyway, third, to regulate commerce. Fourth, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare. Fifth, from the power to make all laws necessary and proper, carrying into execution all the powers vested in the Constitution in the government of the United States. And remember that key word, for carrying into execution all the powers vested in. And actually, if I'm recalling, and I better recall this because I need to get this up, and we're going to go to the Constitution itself. And we're actually going to look at, let me see here, what is that? Oh, yeah, it is Section 1 Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17. Okay. And so, oh, no, no, it's 18. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. Now, did he mention that? I just kind of execution of all the powers vested. No, so he kind of glossed over it. So I want to make sure that you understand the constitutional connotation. From the power to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution all the powers vested in by the Constitution in the federal government. But actually, what it states here is to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. The necessary and proper clause does not include Article 4 powers, any other powers, only the foregoing powers. Do you understand? So this was the end of Section 8, and it was a clause that basically said, and as Madison explained, and Nicholas and everybody, they said, we could have put at the end of each of these sentences to establish post offices and post roads and laws necessary and proper into carrying this power into execution. They could have been redundant in saying that, but instead they just added it at the very end of the enumerated powers. So back to what Monroe was saying, as he goes through this, sixth and lastly, from the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and the property of the United States. So this right here, this sixth and lastly, this is from Article 4 in the Management of Territories. Well, hold on. That is only for the temporary management of a territory as it's getting prepared to become a state. The federal government had, even though they recognized, oh man, if we control territories, then we have more power. And so they could, you know, allow themselves to have the dealings and the everyday nuances of governing the people within territories. However, in states, they had no say over those things. This is why they started reaching for all of these little loopholes that they said, oh, we can do it because of this. No, this is why we go through the ratification debates. And this is why Monroe, who actually was at the Virginia ratification debates, knew that they couldn't assert these powers. Therefore, he says, according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers, nor from all of them united, and in consequence, it does not exist. So clearly, as we kind of wrap up with what Monroe has to say, clearly, there is no power within the Constitution to allow the federal government to operate a Department of Transportation. Now, the Coast Guard is a security, and it is a measurable security, and that should be a part of the U.S. military, not a part. See, they use these types of things. Oh, well, we're going to call that the Department. No, no. It is a national defense, and the whole intent and purpose of the Coast Guard is to defend our coastlines. So it should actually be a part of the Navy. But, oh, that means that we would have less admirals in the Coast Guard and the Navy if we combine those. So, you know, we got to help spread the power and the wealth around by allowing these different military bureaucracies. I'll say this right now. When I was going through Staff Academy, I wrote a paper, and my suggestion was that we actually retire the different branches and go to a U.S. Armed Forces, not a U.S. Air Force, but Armed Forces, that we have the Marine mission and the Navy mission, and then allow the land mission abroad to, you know, be able to expand in nature when there is a necessity for that. There is no need to have a Department of Army, a Department of Space, a Department of Air Force. All you do is create little pots where everybody competes and people try to justify and getting more money. And it just becomes this incestuous growth and relationship. And it is not productive. As a matter of fact, HP and a lot of companies, as they've realized that they got too big and they bloated way too much power and money off in some little offshoot, even Sony has done this, then they realize that what they need to do is they need to start, you know, reducing and streamlining. Instead of having four administrations or administrative offices to manage manpower, to manage training. I mean, every armed forces, every branch of the armed forces is actually engaging in duplicative efforts. Why can't we streamline this and actually just make it a single role and let's make it constitutional? So in other words, the Army doesn't exist until we need the Army to exist instead of fighting perpetual wars and trying to justify the existence of the Army. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so we just wrapped up President Monroe's veto message, and now we'll dive into President Jackson's veto message. Now, this was done in 1830. May 27th. So basically, 8 years have passed since Monroe. And effectively, we're looking at what's the difference between 17 and 20? That's basically 13 years. So over a span of 13 years, Congress has tried three times to empower themselves over state rights, and state powers are basically take away the state rights and powers of, you know, commerce and, or I should not say commerce, but the ability to, you know, control their own roads and so forth, and use the Constitution in a way that they had no latitude to do so. So what he says, because again, this is just the highlights of President Jackson. Gentlemen, I have maturely considered the bill proposing to authorize, quote, a subscription of stock in the Maysville, Washington, Paris, and Lexington Turnpike Road Company, and now return the same house and return to the House of Representatives in which it originated with my objections to its passage. Every member of the union, in peace and in war, will be benefited by the improvement of inland navigation and the construction of highways in the several states. Let us then endeavor to attain this benefit in a mode which will be satisfactory to all. To avoid these evils, it appears to me that the most safe, just, and federal disposition which could be made of the surplus revenue would be its apportionment among the several states according to the ratio of representation. And should this measure not be found warranted by the Constitution, that it would be expedient to the purpose to the states an amendment authorizing it. The constitutional power of the federal government to construct or promote works of internal improvement presents itself in two points of view. The first, as bearing upon the sovereignty of the states, within those limits their execution is contemplated. The second, as asserting the simple right to appropriate money from the national treasury in aid of such works when undertaken by state authority, rendering the claim of jurisdiction. Although frequently and strenuously attempted, the power to this extent has never been exercised by the government in a single instance. It does not, in my opinion, possess it. So there's a key word or a key phrase right there. It does not, he's talking about the general government, the federal government, it does not, in my opinion, possess it. And no bill, therefore, which admits it, it can receive my official sanction. So he moves on and states this. But in the other view of the power, the question is differently situated. The ground taken at an early period of the government was, quote, that whenever money has been raised by the general authority and is to be applied to a particular measure, a question arises whether the particular measure be within the enumerated authorities vested in Congress. If it be, the money requisite for it may be applied to it. If not, no such application can be made. Independently of the sanction which given to appropriations for the Cumberland and other roads and objects under this power, the administration of Mr. Madison was characterized by an act which furnishes the strongest evidence to his opinion. To an extent, a bill was passed through both houses of Congress and presented for his approval, quote, setting apart and pledging certain funds for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states, and to render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense, close quote. Regarding the bill as asserting a power in the federal government to construct roads and canals within the limits of the states in which they were made, he objected to its passage on the ground of its unconstitutionality, declaring that the assent of the respective states in the mode provided by the bill could not confer the power in question. The only cases in which the consent and cession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution, and superadding to these avowals his opinion that, quote, a restriction of the power, close quote, to provide for the common defense and general welfare, to cases which are to be provided for by the expenditure of money, would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great and most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution. So here he is quoting Madison in the bonus bill back in 1817, 13 years prior. And he goes on and says, I have not been able to consider these declarations in any other point of view than as a concession that the right of appropriation is not limited by the power to carry into the effect the measure for which the money is asked, as was formerly contended. The views of Mr. Monroe upon the subject were not left to inference. During his administration, a bill was passed through both houses of Congress conferring the jurisdiction and prescribing the mode by which the federal government could exercise it in the case of the Cumberland Road. He returned it with his objections to its passage. Okay, so now President Andrew Jackson not only cited Madison in his veto of the bonus bill, he also emphasized the points that that power does not exist. He then referenced and cites James Monroe's veto, which we just finished. Both of these veto bills or veto messages from Madison and Monroe we've just covered. And now within Andrew Jackson's veto and the message that he's sending back to Congress, he's basically telling the same thing. And he's actually quoting Madison and referencing Monroe. I don't believe I remember seeing any Monroe citations. And if you ask me, between Monroe and between Madison, I think Monroe probably put it a little bit easier for people to understand. The thing I loved about the way Madison did it was he actually pointed to those four clauses: the Necessary and Proper Clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, the Commerce Clause, and the Supremacy Clause. And he pointed out that none of those clauses could grant the federal government or give the federal government that power, even if the states agreed to it. So, moving on, and again, it's kind of interesting. This was a 9-page, and basically we've cut it down to 2 pages. Anyway, so what Jackson says next is, this brief reference to known facts will be sufficient to show the difficulty, if not the impracticality, of bringing back the operations of the government to the construction of the Constitution set up in 1798, presuming that it is to be its true reading in relation to the power under consideration, thus giving an admonitory proof of the force of implication and the necessity of guarding the Constitution with sleepless vigilance against the authority of precedents which have not the sanction of its most plainly defined powers. For although it is in the duty of all to look to that sacred instrument instead of the statute book, to repudiate at all times encroachments upon its spirit, which are too apt to be affected by the conjuncture of peculiar and facilitating circumstances, it is not less true that the public good and the nature of our political institutions require that individual differences should yield to a well-settled acquiescence of the people and confederated authorities in particular constructions of the Constitution on doubtful points. I'm going to pause right there. We're going to go into a quick break, and then we'll be back to finish these paragraphs, the last two paragraphs, I believe, of what Jackson has to say. But I want you to understand, and I believe this is really coming through here, that the federal government must obtain permission from the states to legitimately exercise a power. Therefore, it must be enumerated either in the body or in an amendment to the Constitution. So with that, we'll be right back after this short break. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we're finalizing these comments with Jackson. And, you know, the reason, again, the reason I'm doing this, the reason I'm going through these veto messages is really clear. To give you the evidence of the constitutional paradigm that the federal government could not just assume any power. Even if they did, and even if the states ascended it, they still would not possess the authority in the Constitution. Therefore, everything that they are exercising without the amended, the amendments necessary to the Constitution, they are exercising unconstitutional powers. It's when you're dealing with a contract, either it's in the contract or it's not in the contract. If it's not stipulated, it can't be done legally. Now, the reason this is really, really, really important is if you understand fraud, when somebody takes money and spends it on something that they have the power to do so, that's a legitimate transaction. However, when the government, which is enumerated very specific powers, assumes new powers that they don't have and starts spending, taxing the people and spending it on things they don't have the authority to do, they are committing fraud upon the American people, saying we need more money from you, and then spending it on something they don't have the power to do so. So therefore, when one looks at that debt clock, when one looks at everything that is owed to our debt and our debtors, you will find that when it comes to fraud, those debts are illegitimate. They're not legally attained debts. So it's really, really important so that you can understand where these limitations are, how they are, how the federal government has the ability to obtain legitimate powers. And that's only through the amendment process. So anyway, let me just wrap up right here, these last two paragraphs, and then we'll kind of, you know, wrap up the show here. In the other view of the subject, the only remaining one, which it is my intention to present at this time, is involved the expediency of embarking in a system of internal improvements without a previous amendment to the Constitution, explaining and defining the precise powers of the federal government over it, assuming the right to appropriate money to aid in the construction of national works to be warranted by the contemporaneous and continued expositions of the Constitution, it's insufficient for the successful prosecution of them must be admitted by all candid minds. And this is his summary. This is the most important part of his summary. If it be the wish of the people that the construction of roads and canals should be conducted by the federal government, it is not highly expedient but indispensably necessary that a previous amendment to the Constitution delegating the necessary power and defining and restricting its exercise with reference to the sovereignty of the states should be made. Without it, nothing extensively can be effected. The right to exercise as much jurisdiction as is necessary to preserve the works and to raise funds by the collection of tolls to keep them in repair cannot be dispensed with. Now, but what do you do if they actually do get away with it? That's what I'm telling you. It is fraud. I want you to understand that when we start looking at, and we can go through the books because they have the records of what they spent and how much money they made. The question is, how much debt was spent on actual constitutional stuff? If you take the budget of every year, the outlays and the budget and what they're spending money on, if you deduct the money on the unconstitutional stuff, the question is, did the government receive enough revenue to cover those costs? Unequivocally, I'll tell you yes. I will tell you that the defense budget, foreign businesses or foreign affairs, I should say, and the spending of money on those needful things that the government needs to do, well, then that is all being covered by the revenues. So when they come along and they say, we need more money to be able to do this and that, but this and that is not within their jurisdiction. These things are not within their powers. So what happens? Well, it's simple, friends. They have to commit fraud. And so when they commit fraud, they have actually put themselves in jeopardy. So when we actually conduct Republic Review and we delineate the budget and everything else, you're going to find that our debt is nothing. We really don't owe these other countries. So the question is, what is the responsibility of the other countries when they come along? Do they blindly trust government in saying, we're going to take money from you and promise to pay it back because we're going to be spending this on legitimate things that we have the ability to do? If you go and create a debt, you go and make a loan for yourself on something you don't have the authority to do, and the bankers do not do the due diligence in verifying that you actually can spend this money on these things that you want to borrow money for, air quotes here, then what you're dealing with and what we're seeing is a massive fraud. It's not just a Ponzi scheme. This is outright fraud. So I just want you to understand that the benefits of forcing full compliance to the Constitution, I would almost say, is innumerable. Only God knows how many apples are in a seed. And only God knows what can happen when government actually lives within the boundaries that the Constitution is created for them. Now, so as we kind of wrap up, there are some things that we want to get into. One of the things that I want to mention is that earlier, actually it was yesterday, when Biden was in Michigan, and he was making some comments. Did anybody notice that when Biden started talking, he was hoodwinking the audience because he was standing in front of a bunch of union, quote unquote, union members, supposedly, and talking about how great the union is and how they built this country and so forth. But when he started actually going into his conversation, the two things I really want to point out is, first, Biden started calling out this concept of nationality, nationalism. He wanted to basically start saying that he supported nationalism. Well, hold it now. Nationalism flies in the face of everything that they've been saying, because that's what Trump's been saying. If Trump is saying that, then therefore nationalism must be the right position, which is why he's taking it. But that's only a facade, because there's no evidence ever that he actually supports nationalism other than the nationalizing of government and government's reaches and controls. The other thing that he mentioned was he mentioned a 10% tax break for companies that supported the inner building. And it was kind of like a veiled reference of this companies that are giving direct support to these, let's just call them community building endeavors or community building enterprises, whether they be organizational like Antifa, like Black Lives Matter, or whether they be something similar or what have you. I am telling you that what he is basically saying is he wants to use the payola system, and he wants to legitimize it by doing exactly what basically the Obama administration had done, because the Obama administration actually gave contracts to the loyalists like Kaiser of Solyndra. I mean, he received millions of dollars in payback for the $75,000 he contributed to the Obama campaign in 2008. So I want you to just think about these things. When you hear Biden talk and he mentions these great things that may seem on the surface to be, you know, like very good and kind of Trumpish, close quote, and you know, I'm just quoting here. But the fact of the matter is what Biden is really looking to do is he's looking to be able to have control, and he's looking to get the taxpayers to fund the revolution. And so when they actually give tax breaks to companies that are on board with implementing communism in the communist state, then they're going to reward them before they destroy them. Everything gets destroyed when everything moves into the public sector from the private sector. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And tomorrow we will get into, our next episode, we will get into marketing. But we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.